when your world is falling apart. An invitation to trust God. Hello, this is Doug Clark. Welcome to Probe. Probe this week takes us to one of the more discussed chapters in the book of Isaiah, chapter 7. What is it all about? What draws people to its words? Why the focus of the New Testament on this chapter? What should we learn here? To help us answer these questions, I have again asked Drs. Alden Thompson and Zdravko Stefanovic, both of whom teach Old Testament at Walla Walla College, to be my guests. Welcome to Probe.
Thank you.
It might be helpful, given the history of interpretation of Isaiah 7, particularly from a Christian perspective, to start our discussion by asking about Old Testament, New Testament, the dynamics of the Hebrew Bible, the Greek Bible, the Septuagint, the New Testament, the dynamics of how New Testament writers viewed the Old Testament. Maybe that would be a good place to start, and then we can set some background here for the chapter itself. How do we think about the dynamics?
There's no doubt that the New Testament contains important messages. I just feel unhappy if we go into the New Testament too soon and we neglect that rich background of the Old Testament. And this is one example how when we actually study the original context and the story that is found in Isaiah 7, how much we are enriched and how much better we can grasp the main point that Matthew tried to make. Without it, I'm afraid that we may put too much emphasis on the points that Matthew did not necessarily want to put in the first place.
Part of the nuance that gives that richness.
Definitely.
In fact, if I hear you correctly, Zdravko, what you're arguing for is not either or, but both and. Mm-hmm. And that should add to, not mm-hmm. take away from, something we could learn.
Well, there's a word which Matthew uses, which I think is very suggestive. It's fulfill, which to our Western way of thinking often thinks in terms, well, here's a prediction and now it's taken place. And a direct corollary. I think it's probably more likely, if we turn it around, it gives it more suggestive. The filling full. You find that Old Testament prophet and you twist it, you turn it, and adapt it in ways that surprises the hearers. Because whatever the New Testament people understood from the Old Testament, they weren't on the same wavelength with Jesus when it came to understanding his mission. So the key passage, of course, we're thinking about here is the young woman or virgin in Isaiah 7:14. That's what triggers this discussion. It was a sign in Isaiah's day, not just in Matthew's day.
Right.
So you have this tension here. How do you take a sign that was a sign back there and fill it full of new meaning?
And actually, that verse, which is so central to the way we think about this chapter, over the next week, not just this week, but next week as well, we'll be talking about 7 and 8 in particular, those two chapters. And they are held together in special ways. But maybe before we actually jump into chapter 7, a little bit of background of the chapter itself. Unless, Alden, you wanted to add something more about Old Testament, New Testament.
Well, again, so often we get so smug, and I think even Isaiah deals with this, people who are smug. If we follow through these religious rituals, then we've got it all figured out. And there's a surprise element, I think, of a quotation from C.S. Lewis in his journal when his wife died. And you have a major catastrophe like that, it throws all your standard ideas loose.
Oh, your world is falling apart.
And he comments, he says, "My idea of God is not a divine idea. It has to be shattered time after time. He shatters it himself." Could we not almost say that this shattering is one of the marks of his presence? The incarnation is the supreme example. It leaves all previous ideas of the Messiah in ruins. So I think it's terribly important to come back to grapple with the Old Testament. Let's not move too quickly to the New Testament and simply assume that now the New Testament tells us, because there are important lessons back here. God with us.
And I think when we get to the verses that typically we talk about the most, and we look at the language, and you look at the Hebrew text of Isaiah, the original language, and then the translation into the Greek, which was basically, if I understand it correctly, the Bible of most New Testament writers, mm-hmm. and watch those interesting things that happened there, in a process I feel, as a Christian, gives us, you're using the word surprises, gives us added insights and new meanings, and sometimes even richer and deeper than the original use in the first place. So, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the context here, if we were to describe it by one word, that would be crisis. So, you know, to say that the Lord is with us when everything goes well in life, mm-hmm. that's one thing. But somehow what makes it so precious here, this promise, it's a jewel in the Old Testament.
It is.
It's that it was a deep crisis in which the kingdom of Judah found itself.
Now, I'd like to press a point here, and Doug, this may torpedo your plans for what we're supposed to talk about. But the lead into this promise in Isaiah 7:14, that the Lord himself will give a sign. Isaiah has pressed Ahaz to ask for a sign. And Ahaz says, I won't. And Isaiah says, God will give you one anyway. Okay. But I'm curious. I'd be interested to know what your comment is. What did Ahaz have in mind when he said, I will not put the Lord to the test? Was this supposed to be a pious comment? Was it an act of rebellion? What does that comment mean from Ahaz?
Some people have suggested we would have an answer to that question, Alden, if we had it tape recorded, and thereby catch the inflection and see if there was something snide there, if there was something pious, if there was something other than those. I'm not sure we ever come to a conclusion to that.
Well, Isaiah indicates that it wasn't a very pious comment.
This is correct.
I mean, what he says here, hear then, O house of David. Is it too little for you to weary mortals that you weary my God also?
Right.
So Isaiah certainly heard something amiss.
Well, and
in the
people
voice.
Who study the literary form would say that this is a build up to the sign. Mm-hmm. And you almost need this conflict and a little more creativity on the part of the writer here. But, you know, different options. But however we answer that question, this chapter happens in a context, in a historical context, which probably is best understood if we have a map in front of us. How should we think about the geography and the background of chapter 7?
We have a small kingdom called the Kingdom of Judah, or the Southern Kingdom, and then a northern neighbor where there were more people. Let's remember some 10 tribes in the north.
Yes, Israel.
Plus the country of Syria. Both of these joining together against the kingdom of Judah. And the reason for that is the country of Assyria. Now, that's different from Syria. Assyria
Mesopotamia.
Is more. That's right.
The Assyria is one of the big boys from Mesopotamian Valley.
That was the empire. That was the empire of the time. And since Assyria, the Assyrian Empire, was busy elsewhere, more to the north and so on, the Northern Kingdom and Syria, they get an idea, now it's time to rebel, and they would like Judah to take a part in it, and that's why there is so much pressure on the Kingdom of Judah.
Probably to get out from under heavy tribute mm-hmm. and taxes, and in the process gather other small national entities, states, into a coalition against mm-hmm. Assyria, which in some ways is a very foolish thing to do, given the brutality of Assyria. I'm not sure how thoroughly the king of Syria and the king of Israel thought this through. But you're right, they decided they wanted to take to get Judah to support it, but Judah wouldn't, so now you fight against them to get their support.
We are talking of someone like Tiglath-Pileser III, who was known as the terror from the east. Some of the kings would boast how they were able to spread the skins from the people's backs on the walls of the cities. So, unspeakable cruelty.
True cruelty. In the years, evidently, 734 to 732, something like that, and it's called the Syro-Ephraimitic War, Syria and Ephraim, or Israel, against Judah. Those dates are important in this chapter. And we have historical texts from the Assyrian kings who do damage that's going to tie to this. Because we are going to see that Syria is basically wiped out by the Assyrians in 732. And then we're also going to see that the northern kingdom of Israel is wiped out in 722 by another Syrian. So within another Assyrian mm-hmm. King. So we have, in the course of a dozen years, these two threats are gone. That might be a good historical setting for the whole thing. And Stravko, you mentioned a bit ago, crisis, that we have a crisis. Jerusalem is being besieged by the Syrians and the Israelites. So what happens in the crisis? What happens? What transpires that leads us toward this sign?
God does not forget the king of Judah, and Isaiah goes to see him, and Isaiah tells him some words that are very comforting. And by the way, Isaiah does not go alone in a time of crisis.
Tell us about who accompanies Isaiah.
He says that he and his son, and the name of the son is She'ar Yashuv in Hebrew, which translated means a remnant will return, or will come back, or will repent. So this name may be positive and negative. It may be a message of hope and of destruction that the nation, because of the breaking of the covenant and everything that is going to happen, was coming to an end, and only a remnant will survive. And yet, on the other hand, it was a message of hope. There will be a remnant, and that remnant, in a sense, represents the whole nation. So Isaiah goes with his son, and the words are, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid.
A great message, which I think, Alden, tell me if I'm correct on this, shows up, the idea of trusting in God shows up several times in the book of Isaiah. These warm devotional passages about putting our confidence in God. Seems to me Isaiah is on to something here.
Yeah, he repeats that many times. The problem is it doesn't last very long. you have this marvelous statement, but Ahaz doesn't take to it. He doesn't see it's encouraging and helpful at all. He says, why should I ask for a sign? See, so, again, you have these marvelous opportunities where Isaiah seeks to move in with a positive message, but then just as Stravko mentions, the name of this youngster is ambivalent.
Mm-hmm.
It can be good news or bad news.
Or maybe both, because if mm-hmm. a remnant is to return, there's probably something destructive that happened that created the remnant. Mm-hmm. So maybe it is both. And they come to Ahaz. What options does Ahaz have in Jerusalem against the Assyrians? This is probably where we're going to need to conclude, because, and then think next week about the sign itself. What kinds of choices does Ahaz have?
Either to listen to Isaiah or not to listen to his message, and it was really delicate, because the Bible says the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. And it was a difficult choice to make. But it's interesting that in verse 9, Isaiah finishes his talk at this occasion. He says, if you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. So there is a word play here, on the root aman, to believe and to be affirmed.
Mm. By way of conclusion, we remind ourselves of the value of exploring the background of the Bible in order to understand and appreciate it better. That's certainly the case with Chapter 7. We'll talk more about that next week. Thank you, Alden and Stravko, for your assistance today. Next week, as I say, we will be talking along with Alden and Stravko again about Chapters 7 and 8. Please join us then. My thanks to Steve Cochran, the producer of Probe, and to all of you for listening in. Probe, I'm Doug Clark.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.